We're coming out to Easter. And I suppose for some it means the end of term for school. Maybe just a 4-day weekend from work. And of course the chocolate. And I have no intention on lowering the importance of the chocolate at this time of year. I've already been getting treated to a Maltese bunny whenever Sarah comes home from the shops. Do you know what they are? Yes? They're great. It's a Malteser chocolate in the shape of an Easter bunny, a Maltese bunny. They're fantastic. But of course, for many of us, Easter's certainly about much more than all of that. It's about those events that sit at the centre of why we gather here together each Sunday. Why we feel we've been called together for a purpose and a life that's much bigger than what we'd be living had we not believed that God had in fact entered our world and acted, as John said, in love, in that very special way through the death of Jesus on Good Friday and his raising to life again on Easter Sunday. Now, as we approach the Easter weekend over the next few weeks, we're going to look at some of the events leading up to that weekend. And we're going to look at some of the characters too that we see alongside Jesus in the story as he approaches those Easter events. And it is a story of God's love. But it's not a pretty story. The path Jesus travelled on his way to those events, it was a difficult one, to say the least. But that's often the way, isn't it? It's often only through the difficult path that tends to lead to something that's really worthwhile, isn't it? I feel for my kids who need to be encouraged, sometimes forced, to go to school every day. They're only at the start of a long path they need to travel themselves there, that must be hard to see the sense in from where they are at the moment. Now, I know it must be difficult for them, but I also know that it's a path worth travelling, one that will leave them much better off in the end had they travelled it than not travelled it at all. Well, one little girl made me laugh the other day as I was dropping the kids off to school with her protests about going to school. She obviously saw no logical reason for facing this difficult task her parents were making her do each day of the week. That the whole way in she protested, "I don't want to go to school. Why do I have to go? It's boring. It's stupid." She goes, "I don't see why anyone would want to come to this place every day." Her parents were annoyed at her protest, but I couldn't help but laugh. It's funny when it's someone else's kid. And no offence to the teachers here, but I reckon I could understand where she was coming from. I don't know, but maybe even the teachers feel that way too, just like that little girl sometimes having to go every day. But don't we all feel like that sometimes in different situations? As adults, though, we might have more of an opportunity of choice in some of our situations than our kids or that little girl does, whether we'll choose to walk into those difficult paths that end up being worthwhile or whether we can try and avoid them. It's in this scene that we're looking at today, I reckon we get a glimpse of the contrast of those paths between choosing to walk in or trying to avoid the difficult path that we're faced in life a lot of the time. We're looking at this scene, obviously, of Jesus' arrest, where he's betrayed by one of his closest friends. He's one of his closest followers, Judas. And look particularly at the contrast of the paths between Judas and Jesus today. Judas, of course, he's the villain in the scene. And we probably find it easier to view Jesus as just an evil person, a pretender who could never really have been a friend of Jesus, despite being one of those 12 that Jesus chose as his closest disciples. But there's no escaping that fact that Judas was in fact one of his closest followers, one of his closest friends, which makes the betrayal all the worse, probably. And I'm not convinced either that Judas was only a pretender all that time. For him to follow Jesus through all those years of ministry, he must have been, like everyone else, drawn to and inspired by the things that Jesus was saying and doing through all that, like all the others that followed Jesus. I'm sure Judas would have been inspired by visions of a world where people love one another as God had loved them, as John was speaking about. Maybe challenged by Jesus' teachings about this too, about forgiveness and sacrifice. But as challenging as these things were, I'm sure Judas would have felt the same sort of things that many of us feel about these things. That there's a truth in them that connects deep within us, deep within our hearts, our souls. That this is how things should be. The hope that these things could one day possibly become a reality in our world or in a future world. Those things that Jesus taught about and even lived out in his own life, the love, the forgiveness and sacrifice, it all makes sense for a better world, doesn't it? Which I'm sure is why so many people were drawn to these things and are still drawn to them today. Why we are drawn to God by the things that Jesus said and did. But being inspired by and drawn to these things is one thing. It's quite another to actually live it out in a world that seems to function almost in complete contrast to these things. It's not easy to love when you feel like you're being attacked. Instead of forgiveness, we want justice. We want people to get what they deserve. It makes more sense a lot of the time that we should stand up for ourselves, fight back, defend ourselves, than take on that life of sacrifice. And Judas, I'm sure he liked where Jesus was going with all this stuff. But when the pressure mounted, that path that Jesus was leading them on and pointing them toward became less inviting. It's why I say, rather than just being an evil person with wicked intentions, I don't think Judas probably wouldn't have been much more different than any of us. He's a pretty quiet figure in the Gospels, in the stories that talk about all those years of ministry. We don't hear much about him. And though they faced some challenges through all those years, we don't hear much about Judas, his character or his intentions through that time, until the point in the story where things become really intense. It's only when the tension seems to almost reach its peak between Jesus and the religious leaders and others around the place who were feeling threatened by the influence that Jesus was having on the people. When the religious leaders' intention to kill Jesus becomes clear to everyone, to Jesus and his followers, and it's when Jesus and his followers are forced to go underground, in a sense, just before these Easter events, that's when we see Judas's questionable character and his intentions really come into the story. So I'd say that rather than telling us who Judas was all along, I'd say this tells us what Judas was like, or how he reacted when he really found himself under pressure. And it's not only Judas either that we see being affected by the pressure of that situation. We start to see all sorts of reactions coming out from Jesus' followers, from the other disciples. Of course, it's Judas who follows that path to a more tragic end than the others. But pressure situations, they can bring out all sorts of things from us, can't they? A couple of weeks ago, I was faced with the task of getting the kids organised and off to sport by myself one afternoon while Sarah was away. And I reckon I handled it pretty good up to a point. I got them home from school. I had them fed, dressed, all in a great time, which was probably even better than it usually is, actually, because Sarah and I tend to conflict ourselves a bit over going to these things. I like to be nice and early, where Sarah doesn't want to be any earlier than she thinks we need to be. So I was saved a bit of a battle in that afternoon. So we were organised and walking out the door when we realised that one of the kids' footy boots was nowhere to be found. And it turned out they'd been left in Sarah's car, who was away from last time we'd went. And the way I saw it, Sarah wasn't even there and she'd still found a way to make us late. Of course it wasn't Sarah's fault. But you think funny things in those situations, don't you? we react in different ways, and that happened on this day. Things got frantic at this point. We went searching for a spare set of boots that would fit. We were swapping laces from one pair of shoes to another. And by the time we'd jumped in the car, time was getting pretty tight. We're actually probably later than what we'd ever been. And then one of the kids had to quickly jump out of the car and grab the footy that we'd forgotten. And we were in a hurry, so as they jumped out, I said, "Go, grab the footy, I'll meet you at the front gate." And I began backing the car out of the carport when we all heard a strange sound from within the car. I looked out my window to see the back door on my side where one of the kids had jumped out coming around to meet me at the front. And rushing out to grab the footy, they'd left the back door of the car open and had caught on the pole in the carport as I was backing out. It was no one's fault. It was a frantic situation. But it just seemed to heap chaos on top of chaos in that situation. By this point now, the kids started going at each other about whose fault it was, about the door. I still thought it was Sarah's fault because she had the boots that had started all this mess. And none of our reactions were helping anything. That's what we do, isn't it, in those situations when the pressure mounts. It's just so easy just to start turning on one another, looking for someone to blame, questioning and accusing, and sometimes it's those people that are closest to us that are caught in all of that. Now I think about that, and I think it probably shouldn't surprise us that much than just the sort of thing that we see happening with one of Jesus' closest followers when they found themselves in the midst of such a tense and difficult situation there. Now, I don't want to defend Judas's actions in any way. They were terrible, and particularly where they continued on to. But rather than labelling Judas as just simply an evil person that we can just place over here, away from us, is it possible he was just a person who got scared? Scared in a situation that was just seeming to get out of control. And he reacted in ways that just weren't good. It makes us react terribly sometimes, doesn't it? That when things get frantic and we feel like we've lost control, we get desperate to gain control again. And we do all sorts of things. Judas saw what he thought was an opportunity to gain a position where he might feel more in control. It was a shocking path to take, where he betrays his close friend and for 30 pieces of silver. Finds himself in a position where he's leading a band of soldiers and guards in the dark of night to capture Jesus, his close friend. They come into this scene with, John says, with blazing torches, lanterns and weapons. Their violent intentions are clear in that. And it's not a scene, certainly not a scene where Judas seems to be the one in control. Things get way out of hand beyond, I believe, what he would have ever imagined from this point on. In this scene, though, one stands out as the only one who isn't lost in the chaos of it all. And that Jesus, he stands out among everyone else in that scene, in that reading that Mark read for us. As his captors, his attackers are approaching, Jesus, rather than retreating or cowering, he steps forward to face them. And he asks them, "Who are you looking for?" And they reply, "Jesus the Nazarene." Without hesitating, Jesus says, "I am he." Now, I love this scene where John says that the group draws back at this and falls to the ground as he says that. It's clear who's in control here, isn't it? But we don't see Jesus taking control in the ways that we or everyone else often tries to gain control with force and reacting out of fear. We see even one of Jesus' other followers, one of his other faithful followers, react in that way. He draws his sword, swings it, and ends up cutting some poor fella's ear off. But Jesus turned to him and says, "No, that's not the way. Put your sword back in its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup of suffering the Father has given me?" One of the other Gospels, Jesus says, "Put away your sword. Those who use the sword will die by the sword." We're given a picture here of two paths. Two responses to things, difficulties that we face in the world, or the difficult path we face in the world. We all face. There's a response that we all seem to be inclined toward. That's easier for us to take when we feel like we're being attacked or feeling under pressure. And we try to gain control by fighting back, defending ourselves, protecting ourselves, accusing others, questioning others sometimes. But these reactions, I'm sure we'd all know, and we've all experienced, I'm sure, they rather than giving us control, they often only add to the chaos. Chaos on top of chaos. Not only making the situation worse, but making things worse for us particularly too. And we see that path in the path of Judas. It's a path that ends in regret. Path that ends in a tragic death. And that's where the story ends for Judas. Then we have another path, a different path that Jesus takes. The path he takes, one where he's trusting that this is the path that God has laid out for him. He says, "Shall I not drink from this cup that God has given me?" It's not an easy path by any means. A cup of suffering, he says. It sees him arrested by his captors in this scene, then to be turned over and beaten, tortured and humiliated before he's eventually killed. But unlike Judas, that's not where the story ends for Jesus, is it? In fact, the story doesn't end for Jesus. It continues that as he's raised to life again on that Easter Sunday. But that's not what really marks his path through all that suffering. It wasn't about saving himself. That's what Judas's path was about, even though it didn't end that way. Jesus' path was marked by those very things that he'd been teaching about and trying to point his followers toward throughout all of that ministry. A path marked by love, by forgiveness, and of course, of sacrifice. These are things that go against everything we feel like doing when we're faced with those difficult situations and we encounter difficult people. But it leads us on a path to something much better than the one that we head down when we react in those ways that we're inclined to react, usually. It's why Jesus came into the world, to point us in a different direction, to show us the way to life instead of death. And we're shown that no more clearly than in that path that Jesus takes to the cross in these last moments, last part of the story here. And it's not an easy path. To follow Jesus in a path marked by those things like love, forgiveness and sacrifice, it's not a path that comes easily for us. But as our experience and all sorts of things will tell us, it's, as I said at the beginning, it's only often through the difficult path that leads us to something that's really worthwhile. And the Easter story here tells us that story of two paths. Two paths that lead to very different destinations. Each day in our lives, right now, we face the challenge of choosing which path we'll take. We face the challenge of this choice every time we choose how we will respond to the difficulties that we encounter each day. There's the path that comes quite easily to us through our reactions the things that we normally take. And then there's the difficult path. It's the path marked by love, by forgiveness and sacrifice. And Jesus shows us just how difficult that path is. And he also shows us just how worthwhile it is with its outcome. Through what Jesus has done in those Easter events, God has provided a way for us all to be a part of that different outcome than the one that we've been making for ourselves in this world. He's opened the way to salvation, to a new life, to a better future for the world. It's a way that's been made, just reinforcing again what John was speaking about, it's a way that's being made through God's love, through God's forgiveness, through Jesus' sacrifice. And we're invited and called to follow in that way, to follow in that path that Jesus has shown us the way toward, a path marked by love, forgiveness, sacrifice. And again, I'll say it again, it's not an easy path because it's not the one that comes naturally. It's not easy to love when you feel like you're being attacked. It's not easy to forgive when all we want is justice for them to get what they deserve. It's when we face these things, these challenges in our everyday lives, it's there that we choose the path that we take. Again, we're given that picture of those two paths in the Easter story and where they lead to. It's up to us to decide which path we'll take. Thanks, guys.